And they were making a statement that they didn't want media in their lobby, and that's how they decided to do it.
Oh my God! I didn't realize that part.
Anyway, it's been a while. Thank you for calling. Let me see. If I look at your tour dates, you're in Fairbanks right now.
Fairbanks right now, exactly.
Yeah. Have you been to Alaska before?
No, it's the first time, and it's my 50th state.
Excellent.
Yeah, so this completes it. So it's a big deal for me.
I would think that sometimes I've been up in that area, and people are, when artists make an attempt to get the music to them, they're very appreciative. They're extremely appreciative.
Just in general, people have been really friendly so far, you know, and they people talk to you like they know you, and it's just very welcoming. Our connection was through Seattle yesterday, and the flight was delayed for a couple of hours, so we were standing there by the gate for a couple of extra hours, and people were just really friendly, you know, and seemed to know about people going back to Fairbanks were. You know, they seemed to know about the show, and it seemed like the plane was full of, with the exception of a band who was also playing in Fairbanks tonight, a band called Walk the Moon,
yep.
A young kind of rock band. It seemed like everybody else on the plane was from Fairbanks and stuff, okay. You know, coming back home, and people knew about the show, and they were. This could have been nicer. Yeah.
Let me take you back up to that lobby, the Orpheum Theater, for just a moment, because you said something that day that I really stuck with me. You said that you wanted to know about Texas singer-songwriters. And so you created, if I'm correct here, a radio show that allowed you to talk to all of those singer-songwriters, and you got an education from your own show. Is that correct? Did I remember it?
No, I didn't do a radio show, but when I was in school, I was part of a student programs office committee that hosted student performances every weekend, and we had enough budget usually two or three times a year to bring in somebody like a professional, and most of the time our budgets were such that we had to try to hire people from, you know, who are nearby, Houston or Austin. And I was a journalism major in school. So
right.
Through that and getting to write the occasional music story for fun. I mean, everybody always wanted to write the entertainment stories. And my regular beat for the paper was this Bryan, Texas City Council. But we would all sort of vie for the entertainment stories. And so occasionally I'd get to interview some of my favorite Texas singer-songwriters. And I really enjoyed that because as a fan, you know, a genuine fan of their music and as someone who would, you know, learn their songs, I enjoyed being able to ask questions about them.
Let's put some names to that answer. Whose paths did you cross?
Oh, gosh. People like, I got to interview Stephen Fromholtz and Willis Allen Ramsey and Don Sanders from Houston, who's
nice.
A staple in the folk world down there, and Eric Taylor and Nancy Griffith and Michael Martin Murphy. Gosh, those are just a few.
That's
very good.
Nice.
Really fun to get to. Yeah, I didn't review shows really. I mean, I didn't really enjoy reviewing shows, but I liked to do an advance story, a story in advance of shows, and was really lucky with these performers to be able to do in person interviews and go and spend an afternoon with them. You know, they were generous with their time, and so that was great fun for me.
Well, then you can imagine how good I feel being able to talk to you in advance of the Alberta dates. This is just fantastic.
you're nice. No, I appreciate your help.
Thank you.
I love getting to come to Calgary and Edmonton and the last interview we did, that was, if I'm not mistaken, that was in 1995.
Exactly.
At the Orpheum. I'd been wanting for years to do a tour of just Canada, and And we did that spring, and it was at Easter. I remember it was at Easter time because on our drive from British Columbia to Calgary, from Vancouver to Calgary, we stopped at a church in Revelstoke.
Yeah,
and just in time for a sunrise service.
Wow,
so we got there just in time. So yeah, so John Hagen, who plays cello with me, you know, and he grew up Lutheran like I did. So he and I went in and got to attend the sunrise service. And as the bus pulled off after the service, it was just the nicest thing. It was a little wood frame church, you know, and the entire congregation came out on the lawn and waved to the bus as we went around the block. So, I'll never forget it.
People, this is an acoustic trio, so you brought a bass and drums?
This on this tour?
Yeah.
These days, no. Well, I call it the acoustic group, really just as a to distinguish it from the large band. But Russ Kunkel will be playing drums.
Oh yeah.
Victor Krauss will be playing bass.
Okay.
John Hagen will be playing cello. Keith Sewell will be playing acoustic guitar and mandolin, and Warren Hood will be playing fiddle.
I think I saw that same band at Chateau Saint Michel.
You know, we have toured in this configuration.
Very good. Now, the set list, no two shows are the same, as I understand. You take requests, you take shout-outs, and not only is it great for the audience, but it helps you shift the mood. You get a sense of the room as well, right?
Well, it does. You know, and we'll, you know, I'll have a handful of songs sort of in mind that I know we're going to play. But, yeah, it's playing with fewer people requires less organization. You know, when I'm out with a large band and we have a horn section or a vocal group, I kind of have to give those folks an idea of when they'll be on stage and when they won't be on stage, and you know, of what's coming next. But with the acoustic group, we're all on stage pretty much the entire show.
Sure.
and everyone knows the song. So if I just start playing the intro to a song, or even start to talk about a song, the band will know which song I mean, and they'll be ready to play. And that does make it fun, because it gives us that flexibility to be able to do the song if somebody asks for it.
And this is almost like a two-part question, but I mean, there's no formula here with your sets. What you get is the joy of musicians playing for the fun, to express themselves, just the joy. Which leads to I've always felt that it is absolutely impossible to put a value on creative freedom. It must feel fantastic.
Well, you know, the I've been really lucky in the course of my career to be supported by business folks who have given me creative freedom. Tony Brown at MCA in Nashville, who signed me to my deal there back in 1985. You know, my first record came out in 1986. Tony was always very supportive of my, you know, just kind of doing the songs that naturally occurred to me to do. In the band, in a live show, I mean, we certainly have arrangements, but within those arrangements, I try to allow for as much flexibility as possible. For example, I don't ask the guys to play the same solo each night. I mean, it's fun for me to hear the players in the band react to one another and to play something different from night to night. And I like to think it's fun for them as well to not feel restricted to just sort of having to do the same thing, one show to the next.
He's Lyle Lovett. He's playing Edmonton and Calgary. We'll give you the dates in just a moment. This is Mulligan Stew on the CKUA Radio Network. Listener-supported radio, Lyle. A real music station.
I forgot we were on the radio. You have to make me sound better than I do. Make me sound smarter.
Sure, I will. Release Me, 2012, loved it. We loved it because, first of all, of the tunes, and it's you, but also Katie Lang did a duet with you, and she's from Alberta, and this station is where she got her musical education, so it all comes full circle. How was that experience for you?
Oh goodness! I love Katie Lang. I first met Katie in Nashville back in 1986. She had just done a record for Warner Brothers in those days, and my first record was just out, and we were thrown together at a lot of you know, new. We were new, and I think we were new, and we got to do a lot of those new performer things together, CMA events and industry events, and so that's how I got to know her. We toured. We did some things. There was a campaign in the UK in 1988 called New Country, and we were both part of that, and we got to do some shows together there, and then we toured together some later that year. In the States, and so you know, we've known one another and kept up with one another since those days. We did a full on summer tour together in 2005 in the States, and that was great fun. I thought of Katie for Release Me because she's so great at doing the classics, you know, and her voice is just amazing. So I hoped it would appeal to her. And we were playing the Edmonton Folk Festival that year. And as we were pulling into town, we were playing on the same evening that she was. But as we were pulling into town site in Edmonton, there she was walking on the sidewalk. And so I ran up the front of the, I saw her out the window of the bus, and I ran up and asked our driver to stop. And I hopped off the bus, and I ran down the sidewalk after her, and I think I scared her a little bit. So I caught her completely off guard and asked her if she'd mind singing on the song, and she agreed to it. But I think it's maybe I had her confused. I mean, she thought somebody was, you know, running up behind her, so I caught her in an unaware moment.
And just going back one step there, when you started, you were promoted along with Steve Earle and KD and Nancy Griffith, as the Mavericks, the new country Mavericks. But then you all found your own space, right?
You know, I think Steve Earle, Nancy Griffith, and I were all on MCA in Nashville,
right.
and it was. That time in the, my first trip to Nashville was in 1984. My first record came out in 1986, and that was a time in Nashville where, lucky for me and other performers like me, Nashville was looking for what might be the next thing. It was right at the end of the great success that had come from the Urban Cowboy film, so the Urban Cowboy craze was sort of trailing off, and Nashville was looking for what might be next. And I think what was next, ultimately, for traditional country music was Randy Travis and Clint Black and Garth Brooks, you know, sort of more traditional country music. But in that search, it gave me the chance to slip through the door. And for that, I'm really grateful. And so I don't know if it was... It was so much the idea that I or performers like me found our own path, but we may have just sort of gone back to gone back to what we've been doing all along.
Sure.
And country music kind of followed its own natural course at the same time. But it did give me an opportunity to make records and which gave me the opportunity to have a real career, which is something really that I was beyond my wildest dreams. I went to Nashville in 1984 to try to get publishers interested in my songs. I didn't think it was a realistic expectation to walk away with a record deal for myself.
I'm probably the last person to ask about this, but I don't even know what country music is anymore. I know what roots is, and I knew what Americana. I know all that stuff, but I don't even recognize it anymore. Do you guys talk about that? Is that a dialogue that you have?
Well, certainly. Just as a fan and a listener. I mean, country. We talk about how different country music is from. From when I was a boy listening to Merle Haggard and, you know, Lefty Frizzell and Ray Price. I mean, it's really different from that. But you know, styles change, tastes change. And it's interesting to watch. I'm really not a part of what's going on in country music, and haven't been for some time, really since those days in the 80s. I'm just grateful for the folks that come to my shows and still buy my records and support me. But none of that really affects me. But yeah, it certainly is different. But it's nice to see. It's nice to see younger generations take on country music and see that generation's interpretation of it. I find it interesting.
You have an opportunity, if you care to do it. The Release Me of 2012 is your last on Curb. So I guess the slate is clean. You can have your own label. You can get other distribution. You can produce your own works if you wish. What's the plan? Have you formulated?
My record deal was through, I've been talking about MCA, but it was Curb Records who brought me to MCA. So it was a partnership from the beginning. Creatively, I always dealt with the folks at MCA, but you're exactly right. The deal was through Mike Curb and Curb Records. And I was in that record deal until its completion in 2012. I've just been making up songs, and I've been trying to figure out what to do next. The one thing that is certain for me is I will do another record. I want to keep my job. I like my job, and I like playing music, and I like making records, and so I'll do that. But I haven't figured out yet how I'll go about it. It's interesting, being in the same business relationship for all of those years from 1985 to 2012. I didn't have the opportunity to explore how the new technology was could affect delivery of a product, and so. So it's been fun for me in these last couple of years to try to figure out what I will want to do and to figure out what my options are, and because there are so many ways to do it these days.
It's a good time to be a musician. Good time to be an artist, actually.
Well, I think it's always a good time to get to do something that you love to do. And it's a blessing, really, to be able to. Every day of your life, pursue something that that you enjoy, and I'm grateful that I get to do that.
I tweeted out last night that I was going to be doing an interview with Monty P. Flagman, people wrote me back and said, "Who are you talking about?" I says I'll be talking to the actor who plays him in the Bridge TV series. Are you going to do Monty again? Will he be another?
I haven't been officially invited, but so far I haven't been killed off. So I would do Monty P. Flagman again. I'm curious to see what happens to him. It's the Elwood Reed is the creator and the head writer,
right,
of The Bridge, and he's just a really, really smart, interesting writer, and I love to see where his plots go. But you don't know anything. They just don't tell you anything. That the only sort of foreshadowing he gave me on my very first day of work in the first season was, he said, "Remember, your character has a chance to develop as long as he doesn't get killed off." And I thought, oh man. And so you never know. Every time I get a script, I read sort of cautiously and hope for the best. So far so good this season. And I hope to be asked back next week.
Lyle Lovett, who's September 22nd, Monday, at Jack Singer in Calgary, and the 23rd, Tuesday, at the Northern Alberta Jubilee Auditorium. You know what you get when you go to a Lyle Lovett show. You feel good as you walk out the door, is what it is, which is all you ever ask. Just make me feel better than I did coming in. Very much look forward to every time you come around. I know that you have to spread yourself pretty thin at times. Can we watch for new music down the road?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Oh, you bet. No, I feel confident I'll be going to the recording studio sometime in the next year And yeah, certainly. I love getting to play music. I love getting to write songs, and I love working with talented musicians. You know, and the musicians that I've gotten to work with in the recording studio over the course of my career and on stage with are, you know, they're just some of the best players in the world. Gosh, getting to stand in front of Russ Kunkel and his drum kit.
No kidding.
In front of Victor Krauss and that upright bass of his. I mean, the foundation that those guys provide is just incredible. And they're so interesting in their choices, and they're so attentive in their listening. If I want to relax in place or move forward, I mean, they pay such close attention. They're just right with me. Their support is incredible.
By the way, last question. I noticed that you have played a lot of wineries on some of your tour schedules, some more than others. And I have two wine friends out of Dallas who took me to the Chateau Saint Michel event. And we were kind of pondering there as you were doing your set, wondering if you were a wine guy, if you have a cellar, are you a wine fan? Do you have a relationship?
No. Not that serious of a wine guy, but yeah, I appreciate a nice glass of wine after a show sometimes. Yeah. You know, never before a show. That's always dangerous for me.
Yeah.
I'm a kind of a cheap date, but but yeah, it is interesting, and you know, traveling around to different places gives us the opportunity to try different wines, and the wines they make there in Washington State are quite different from California wines, yep, for example. It's interesting to see.
All right, Lyle, thank you so much for doing this. I don't know how long it's going to take to come back and do this again or find you on the phone, because it has been a while, but we sure appreciate it. If you could leave us with a couple of IDs, we will play the bejesus out of them.
Oh, gosh, have you, Terry, and I appreciate your doing this and helping us with the show. I always look forward to coming to Calgary and Edmonton, and one of these days we'll do it always seems like we come up into Canada when we're nearby in the States, but that summer or that spring of 1995 when we got to go from coast to coast and stay in Canada was something I'll always remember and something I hope to do again.
Bless you. I have done everything that I set out to do. Thank you.
Terry, thanks. Really, this will help our show a bunch, and I appreciate it. If you come to one of the shows, I'd love to say hello.
I'd love to. Are you coming anywhere near Vancouver?
Oh, you know, we're not on this one. No.
Okay. Thank you.
But we'll come back. Please come sometime.
Thank you.
All right, Terry. Thanks.
Okay, goodbye. Bye.